This is all of it. I'm Kusha Navadar filling in for Allison Stewart. This Friday, Joe's Pub will host an evening of music and storytelling from a recording artist whose albums started as part of a PhD. Here's the song 1603 from No No Boy.
Antonio Vengara, Francisco Miguel, Cristóbal Catoy, Agustín Rondado, Lucas Cato.
Sand is far from Malabar as any soul has known. Peaks of snow, a jagged coast, great giants made of stone. 2 months through the Visayas, then 3 beyond the blue.
That song, 1603, was inspired by a crew list found in a Spanish archive that featured the names of Asian sailors for a ship that visited Oregon 200 years before Lewis and Clark's expedition. It's one of many folk songs about Asian and Asian American history written by Julian Saporiti, who performs as No No Boy. The No No Boy project began while Saporiti was a PhD candidate at Brown University, but it's since grown beyond academia, with Saporiti releasing 3 full-length albums and signing to Smithsonian Folkways Records. Julian Saporiti joins me to talk about the project and preview his show this Friday. Welcome to all of it.
Hey, happy to be part of the New York conversation today.
Awesome. So this project began as part of your PhD at Brown. What was your degree?
So I sort of danced between ethnomusicology, which is basically kind of the cultural study of music, and American studies or American history. Like, so in between there, that's what I did for 7 years.
You know, I looked through your dissertation a little bit, and there was one line in the opening that jumped out at me. You wrote, no, it's great. You wrote, quote, "To date, I have composed over 80 songs for the No No Boy project. While only a small percentage of those are accounted for in this dissertation, I want to be clear that I forefront songwriting not as an ornament or artistic tangent of my scholarly work, but as the motor which drives it." Wow. What did you mean by that?
Oh, that sounds a lot smarter than I am, I assure you. That's the benefit of editing over and over. But, you know, I came to academia in my late 20s after I had had a career for about a decade putting out records in an indie rock band. And so when it came time and they told me you got to write this 300-page, real jargony dissertation, academic paper that probably, honestly, only 2.5 people would actually read, I thought, man, when I used to sing songs, you know, which I know how to do pretty good, hundreds of people would hear my words. And now I really have something to say. All these fascinating histories of immigrants and refugees and war and imperialism, stuff I really wanted to get out there. So it was kind of a no-brainer to just use music to explore these histories, both as a way to express the research to a general audience, but also to go deeper into my research. Because I found when you put like kind of an artistic motivation behind what you're doing, it made my oral history collection, it made my archival research, it made my field site research so much richer, and I wanted to do it more. So that's kind of what I mean by like songwriting as the motor behind my academic persona. It's really paid dividends as both a scholar and an artist.
Wow. And it sounds like that you find that format is able to express ideas that you otherwise couldn't. Is that fair to say?
That's exactly right. I find that, you know, a lot of times it's a question of, I study history. So history to me is just, it's a mess and it's nuanced and it's very complicated. And so often in order to teach it or to write about it, we kind of flatten it out and make it into a narrative or linear. What songs and what art can do is you can really play with nuance, maybe playing happy lyrics of a moment in time against like a darker music. You can play with very deep emotions or ideas of nostalgia and melancholy. You can use juxtaposition to sort of honor that mess of history, that things weren't all good and things weren't always all bad, even in the toughest times. And you can kind of sit with that mess, especially as like music surrounds you. And then hopefully, you know, my goal is to get people to listen to the songs and maybe learn a little history, but also learn from that history.
The history that you're talking about kind of permeates through all aspects of both the dissertation and also just the name that you used to perform with. Your artist name is No No Boy. That's taken from a 1957 novel by Japanese-American author John Okada. Why that name?
Well, it's a teacher's trick. It's to get people to Google the band name and read a book. So every single thing from the liner notes to the album art to the band name, it's trying to get people to learn these stories and these histories. And Okada's book is great because it talks about a very understudied part of World War II history, the Japanese-American incarceration, and sort of the aftermath of it. But it also nuances that community in a way that shows the divide between people who were maybe loyal to Japan or loyal to America during the war, these tough decisions. And it's also considered the first great Asian American novel. So as an Asian American dude myself, it's something I like to gesture to. So I know that the press has sold a few copies because of our band name, which is great.
That is great. And a great teacher's trick. You're right. Leave a breadcrumb for the Googling to happen or whatever search engine you want to use. So you're talking about how those different emotions, happiness, sadness, it's a full spectrum when you look at history, and music can really elevate it. I'd love to get into some of those songs. Cool. Let's talk about your first album, which was titled 1942. That's the first year of Japanese internment camps. Your second album was 1975, and that's the year Saigon was captured by North Vietnam. Why mark those 2 years in particular?
Those were kind of the poles of my research. In particular, I was looking at musicians who, despite, you know, being in a war in different circumstances, Japanese Americans in the 40s, I was looking at people who played swing music and put on dances despite being behind barbed wire. And I made friends with some of those musicians. So it was kind of the tip of the hat to them on the first album. And the second album, that's the year that really changed my family's life, because my mom is Vietnamese and our whole family had to leave the country shortly after that. So those are really important dates in American history or world history. And it's, how like everyone's all on like the Easter eggs and like Taylor Swift music videos. So it's like, what if you leave some Easter eggs that actually educate some people instead of encourage gossip. Maybe that's what we're doing.
It's interesting. Love that you bring up the Easter eggs, because the album 1975 features a song called "The Best Goddamn Band in Wyoming." And in the liner notes for the album, you wrote that the No No Boy project, and I'm quoting here, started with a photograph in a museum, a picture of a forgotten Japanese American jazz band from Wyoming. Can you talk more about that photo and the band that's pictured in it?
Yeah, I mean, that's where this project actually started. I started turning my histories that I was researching into songs while I was a PhD student at Brown, but I did a master's after I was this kid in an indie rock band out in Wyoming. And I would take these rock climbing trips all around the state every weekend. And so one weekend I was up by Yellowstone, and there's a small little museum that pays homage, or it's a memorial to this concentration camp, basically, of Japanese Americans who were put there during World War II, removed from the West Coast, is barbed wire, all this horrible stuff. And it was sad, right, on a like kind of historical black and white way while I was walking around. But then I saw this picture of these musicians. And I had gone to Berklee College of Music, not the smart one, the one in Boston, the music school. And
which is a fantastic school for music performance, just to put that out there.
Yeah, it's a bunch of kids like smoking and playing guitar at an extremely high level on both counts. But it was a great experience. And that's not to slag Berklee at all. But I had taken three jazz history courses. And I never once saw pictures of people who looked like me, kind of dark hair, slanty eyes, that kind of thing. The stuff I used to get picked on at the playground for growing up in Nashville, Tennessee. So to see this whole crew of Japanese people, basically, Asian American, who were also living in Wyoming, as I was, playing jazz like I was at the time, but under very different circumstances, that was my way into history. And then I became friends with one of the last living members of the band, this woman named Joy, who became like a grandma to me. And it's one of the reasons I still kind of play these concerts, to tell this history, to tell her story. So I wrote all of this up into a song. And it's been amazing just to be able to teach this wild history of, when people take away 98% of your agency, right? Put you behind bars, put you behind barbed wire. it's instructional. It's not only historical, but it's instructional to look at the people who, with 98% of their agency taken away, what they do with the 2% left to them. They still play music every week and entertain people and put on dances and find life even behind the barbed wire amongst the dust and the cold of Wyoming. And it really makes me think about what I should do with the 100% of my agency that I have every day in my life.
So let's listen to a little bit of that, Julian. Here's the best goddamn band in Wyoming.
The flyer red musicians needed. So young Yone grabbed the silver mouthpiece. Tracked down a kid who brought a trumpet to Pomona. Let Yone have it on a free 2-year lease. Joy Terra Orca, Nate Takashida. Went to the tryout, she was only 16. With some girlfriends to cheer her on, their club was called the Roddells. Mom said if you keep up the school joy, you can sing. Georgie Kawa.
That was the best goddamn band in Wyoming from Julian Saporiti, a.k.a. No Boy. His latest album, Empire Electric, from 2023, is being performed at Joe's Pub on March 29th. Let's talk about Empire Electric for a little bit. Your latest album, Empire Electric, began in a monastery in upstate New York. And there's this song called Little Monk on the album, which you describe as the album's center. So what did you want to capture about your experience at the monastery in this song?
So my wife and I met doing this project, actually, at Brown University. She was a great songwriter, and she was the first person I asked to help fill out some harmonies when I was just making demos. And eventually she became my wife. At first, she was just the person singing harmonies. But by the time we were both done with our coursework at Brown, the first place we wanted to head for was Thich Nhat Hanh's monastery in upstate New York, Blue Cliff, because I had been a big Thich Nhat Hanh acolyte, I suppose, fan, back to my Wyoming rock climbing days. It was the first Vietnamese guy I'd ever read any work by. And he's this incredible monk who passed away recently, but he did so much to really like change my thinking. And it was really a necessity because as a PhD student, especially at a place like Brown, during like the Trump administration, where everyone was like so volatile and protesting all the time. Like there was a protest on campus every single day about everything except for economic class for some reason. The kids didn't want to protest that. I don't know why. But they, you know, it was just a lot of the virtue signal stuff. And I get it, man. When I was like a college kid, I was like, I ran the Ralph Nader campaign at my college. So I was like as left as you can get. And I still am. But I think the Buddhism that had kind of steeped in and studying all this really dark history, and especially coming from a Vietnamese American family and knowing what happens when a country can't get their stuff together, knowing that civil war is possible and that your family members can die and your cities can be renamed if you don't take peace seriously, I kind of wanted to get away from a lot of the, you know, capital A activism that I had been a part of and try to think of how I can live in a more sustainable way and not get burned out and not be depressed over the state of the world all the time. And that's not to degrade any of the marches or protests that people are doing that I fully support the causes of, but it is to say, how do you, you know, if you just look at the abstract world all the time and all the horrible stuff, especially with how connected we are in your feed constantly, you won't get any sleep. And so going to the monastery after being in such an intense environment, collegiate environment like we have today, was just necessary for my wife Amelia and I. We just kind of camped out with the monks and did dishes and cleaned toilets and meditated. And it's kind of a racket, actually, when you think about it.
But, so it's interesting also, that little monk, you know, you talk about little there, but it sounds like a big set of feelings and a big experience that you're writing from. So let's listen to a little bit of that song. Here's Little Monk.
Sounds good.
So it's the end of the world once again. What is it this week? Protest over this, riots over that. Do you remember at the monastery when the outraged child cried? The little monk just sweetly smiled back. Oh, how How and when do I get so zen? Light the way from your small apartment.
The lyric from that song, When Did I Get So Zen, I think is such an interesting question to ask. If you are zen, reflecting on when that happened, kind of like it just tended to happen on its own. In the liner notes, you describe Empire Electric as a more adventurous album than your previous ones, and you also wrote about extending deeper into Asia than on your previous albums. Can you unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, so this was the first album of this project that I did post-graduation after getting the PhD. So I had no more academic masters to please, so to speak. So I could be more adventurous sonically, and I could kind of just go off and explore. So it's a lot of field recordings that you're hearing. A lot of almost all the percussion on my albums comes from me going to historical field sites and banging on like an old barrack wall or barbed wire and then cutting that up the way hip-hop producers do. And making it into beats. A lot of the organ or keyboard sounds are actual people's voices that I'll sample them singing one note and like make it into an instrument. And so it's just sort of a nice sonic pastiche. And a lot of this record is taking samples or actually playing instruments that come from Vietnam or East Asia or South Asia and sort of blending that hopefully seamlessly with the instruments I grew up with in Nashville, Tennessee, which have their own colonial history, like the banjo coming from Africa or the pedal steel coming from Hawaii originally, and trying to piece all those together to try to get at something authentically American from my point of view, which I've never really heard before, this mixed Viet Italian Tennessean kid. Like, I haven't heard those records. So sometimes you got to make your own, I suppose.
And in your dissertation abstract, in your liner notes for Empire Electric, you refer to the idea of deep listening, which is a term coined by experimental and electronic composer Pauline Oliveros. Can you explain deep listening for listeners a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, or like the Cliff Notes version, it's kind of if you're sitting down in a concert hall, right? Maybe you're listening to a flute player on stage. But you're not just listening to the notes on the page that they're playing. You're listening to everything. You're listening to their breath and the squeaking of the chair or the coughing of the person next to you or the air conditioning. And then you go even more to the interior. You start listening to your own heartbeat or your own thoughts or your anxieties and things like that. So it's, to me, the way I take it, it's basically Buddhism funneled through white people, like a lot of stuff. But I love it because it helps me, approach the world sonically, both with my ears and sort of with my mind. And I find that very helpful as a composer and a person.
It sounds like it really changes the way that you look at things. So when the project began, you know, it was an academic thing. How has it morphed in your mind since then? Hey, are you there, Julian? I think we might have lost Julian, unfortunately. Well, we're going to try to get Julian back. This is WNYC. We're talking with Julian Saporiti, a.k.a. Noboy, about his latest album, Empire Electric, from 2023. He's going to be performing that album at Joe's Pub on March 29th. We're talking about his, you know, dissertation at Brown that then became a full-on album, and it spans multiple albums, and it has specifically to do with the Asian American experience and Asian experience in general. Nono Boy was a project that was tied to his PhD. That PhD was completed in 2021, and we're just talking with Julian about the songs and the ways in which the, you know, exploration of history, especially Asian and Asian American history, can be expressed through song. And while we try to get Julian back, there is another song that he worked on. It's called Mekong Baby. We're going to listen to that right now. Here it is.
Oh,
younger ones. Younger ones.
That was Mekong Baby from Julian Sapriti, aka No Boy. We unfortunately lost Julian, but here's good news. He'll be playing at he'll be playing at Joe's Pub on March 29th. And he's also a part of the Public Song Project. We're halfway through the submission period for the Public Song Project. And if you submit a song, you could be featured alongside folks like Julian, and maybe you could come on WNYC to talk about your song. So for more info, go to our website. It's wnyc.org/public song project. That's it for today's show. Tomorrow, hip-hop artist Cakes DeKilla has just released his third album. It's titled Black Sheep, and it marks a metamorphosis in his sound. He's going to be joining us for a listening party. Just want to say to everyone listening, thank you again so much for your calls today. What a pleasure to hear from you. Hope to talk to you again tomorrow. Have a great day.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.